You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Happy to be with you here the first full weekend of April 2026. Stay tuned. Some good guests as usual. The bird chick Sharon Stetler is with us for the second week in a row. And we will also have Dean Bortz, Dean, Wisconsin Outdoor News Editor. They've got their spring hearings coming up, I believe, next week. And he will preview that with us a little bit. Our buddy Tim Lesmeister here to help me kick off this week's show. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And when do you head back to North Country?
End of April. You know, okay. I see a lot of the anglers that come down here and guide all winter long. I've already started heading back because this early open water up north. I saw Johnny Candle, who's guides out of the Panhandle, who's an incredible guide on Devil's Lake in North Dakota, has already made it home. And it just surprises me that the ice is going out early and these individuals decided to get back sooner than they normally would just because they think it's going to be, you know, some pretty good fishing early this year.
You'll be driving through Georgia, I presume, for maybe part of your trip. I just saw a headline. I got to give OutdoorLife.com credit. They had an interesting story that, you know, wild hogs are a big problem down there across the South. And apparently they're pulling out all the stops in Georgia. They've legalized using drones to hunt those wild pigs, give everybody kind of an aerial view, right? So they know where they are and they can hone in on them even faster. That might put a dent in the wild piggy population down there.
Well, I think the only thing that puts dents in wild pigs is trapping, really. But the truth is that guys like to hunt them, and they like to hunt them at night, and they like to hunt them with thermal imaging scopes, and they hunt them over bait. They've got these feeders that are literally timed to go off at certain times of the day. And when these feeders open up and start dropping whatever it is, corn, whatever, these hogs move in like crazy, and these guys sit out there with their thermal imaging scopes on the rifles, and they just whack away at these hogs. But of course, what happens is you only get a chance at them that one time. Hogs aren't stupid. These things right. will take off and they spread out. And at that point, why not just turn the drone loose? And you can have thermal imaging on the drones as well. And you'll see where those hogs went. So you'll be able to pinpoint the hogs that scooted off of the bait pile and go after those on foot. I think it would be some incredible hunting.
The wild hog thing, we don't have that up here, luckily. We don't want them. It's a real problem. I mean, they tear up the landscape. They eat everything. And they're very, very hard to keep under control once they're established. So I understand why they're going all out trying to control the wild piggies. And you mentioned the baiting. The baiting culture down there is, you know, we talk about baiting up here a little bit and, you know, whether or not to allow it. Michigan, Wisconsin have allowed it on and off. It's a whole different animal down south with those feeders, like you say. In the 1990s, when I was with that Bow magazine, I went down there on a quote-unquote writer's hunt, which was sponsored, and I was down there with other writers, so I got to experience that whole culture. Very, very different. And frankly, it was kind of laugh-aloud funny at times. I mean, you're sitting up in a tree stand over the feeder, and you know it goes off, and you can slowly start seeing all the forest fauna working its way in, because they know you're there, you know, they know there's someone always up in the stand, and you make the slightest little movement, you know, on your bow or whatever, and they all scatter, and then they slowly start working their way back in, and it just repeats the process. It's ridiculous. It's not my kind of hunting at all.
My son, Jason, who was a guide up in Alaska, early in his career, he decided he wanted to maybe try out Texas, do some hunting on one of those big high fence farms. And he was there, and the guy that ran the farm said he wanted to, Jason to go take these hunters out that they wanted elk. And so he took
elk in Texas. Okay, go ahead.
High fence, Texas. And he takes these guys out, and he sets them up in the stand. And then he goes and he's supposed to put out some bait for these elk, right? So he goes and he gets this truck that's got back, you know, gets the truck that's got the bait in it. And as he's driving out to put the bait out, these elk see the truck that's got the bait in it. And they all come running out of the woods and start eating out of the truck as he's driving towards the bait pile.
wait till I get you in front of the hunters, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Now, come on, you dudes. And so he's out there trying to get back into the truck to put this whatever it is out, you know, hay probably, who knows. And these elk won't let him get out of the truck. He can't get the bait out of the truck. These guys are in the stands.
This was a high fence situation because there's I don't think there's wild elk populations in Texas.
Oh, heck right? No. Are you kidding me? They raise them to shoot them.
Yeah, yeah. Real high quality hunting experience there.
That was quite a few years ago, but I still laugh about it. And
you listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisland and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, let's bring it back to Minnesota and talk about something completely different, and that's fishing. You and I have not talked about this yet, but we did not have a bass season closure at the end of February. It closed for walleyes, it closed for pike, but this is the first year we've got a continuous bass season. Now it's catch and release. And you wrote about this for a most recent issue of Outdoor News. This is something you've been ranting about, I dare say, for many years. Why do we close the bass season? Are you happy, Tim? You can go out and fish bass year-round now.
Ecstatic is what I am. And the reason I am is because when the rivers open up, and they're opening up right now.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Oh, you can get out there and you can catch smallmouth. You can catch largemouth. The smallmouth are going to be the ones that start up first. And you'll be able to fish those on the upper Mississippi areas. And as soon as these lakes start opening up, you know, it won't be just about crappie fishing anymore. You'll be able to throw some bigger baits. You got to release the bass. I think that's great. But it's not going to affect the population of bass. I mean, if it was, there wouldn't be any bass left in any of the southern states because Minnesota was one of the last bastions of seasonal bass. So I think that it's a great thing, and I think that now we're going to let the anglers have some fun.
So, Tim, let's talk tactics a little bit. Is there any different sort of way you approach bass fishing? I mean, these are cold water fish right now still. I mean, the much different fishing conditions than you would experience in mid-May. I mean, the water's a lot cooler, right?
Oh, yeah. So your techniques are slower, you know. I mean, the smallmouth bass on the rivers, they'll go for, you know, live suckers, stone roller chubs. And you can also catch them, you know, basically using a very slowly retrieved crankbait. Sometimes I'll just wade out into a river and fish down below some rapids and cast out a crankbait and let the current do the work and just move the rod tip to move the bait around. And these smallmouth bass that are just sitting down there in that slacker water, because you want to fish current breaks. You don't want to fish in heavy current. You're looking for a current seam where you have moving water on one side and slack water on the other. And they're just inside that seam in the slack water. And you let that crankbait kind of slip into there, and all of a sudden, boom, there's another one. And you'll see there are spots where, you know, anglers will just line up and just fish like crazy in these spots where the fish stack up in the river. And they'll be concentrated this time of year. They're not really that spread out. So when you find one, you'll find 20.
Tim, I think it's interesting. You know, the DNR had a press release on this late February. It said, since bass spawning peaks in late May, which is later in the year than some other species, there is no biological evidence that catch and release bass fishing poses a conservation issue for the fish. They've clearly been listening to our radio show over the past decade because you've been saying that forever.
I think that I've traveled all over the country during just about every time of the year, and you'll see that the bass will spawn and nest. They create these nests at different times in different parts of the country. So, you know, earlier down south here and later up north. But what you'll find is that most of the guys that are, you know, real hardcore bass fishermen, they tend to actually not pick on the nesting bass as much as the average anything that's biting kind of angler that sees a fish and just wants to go after it. But the guys that are fishing that just want to go after them don't know how to catch them off the beds. You can cast a lure to a bass on a bed 100 times and not get it to bite. You got to kind of know what to do. I don't recommend pulling bass off beds.
No, me neither.
There's plenty of fish that are out in deeper water and plenty of fish that are using cover in real shallow water. So target those and leave the ones that you can visually see on the beds. Leave those alone.
Tim, we got to grab a break. You'll stick around and help me wrap up this week's show again?
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining me. We'll check in with Tim here in about a half hour or so. We're going to grab a break. We will talk with Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, when we return. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20-gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of 3 prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again, then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks for being with us for a segment. A lot of the content we discuss here you can find in our print or digital versions of Outdoor News. Visit OutdoorNews.com where you can subscribe to either version or call us at 800-535-5191. For the second week in a row, my friend Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, is joining the broadcast. Sharon, good to see you. Thanks for carving out another week for me.
My pleasure. I love to talk about birds.
And as I mentioned last week, folks can find you on social media. Just look for Bird Chick. Instagram, is that one of the best places
Instagram's
to start?
Instagram's probably the best place to find me. Find me and pictures and videos of my sled dog party.
That's right. Yeah. And party's doing well?
She is. She's a little irritated with me because the binoculars are now coming with me on our walks around the wetland. And I stop a lot more than she does. And she's like, come on, let's go.
Sharon, you had a couple interesting stories in Outdoor News the past few months that I thought would be fun to flesh out here a little bit. One was on eagle watching. I think you wrote that around Valentine's Day, and that's still a very valid thing to do here. It's not too late to get somebody out and go search for eagles. They are migrating through as we speak.
They are migrating through, and some are already incubating eggs. So yeah, it's just, even if you're showing someone just an eagle nest, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a lot of eagles. They really spread out once ice out occurs in North Country. So they're probably stacking up here in the Twin Cities metropolitan area as we speak. What are some good areas to go search for eagles?
Anywhere along the Mississippi River is fantastic. There's even a bald eagle nest in downtown Minneapolis right next to the 35W Bridge. You can bike or walk directly underneath it. And actually, it's really a lot of fun because sometimes the peregrines that nest in downtown Minneapolis get a little bossy with them. I have seen some epic aerial batters. As a matter of fact, I was scouting a heron rookery for a program that I'm going to do, and some people were telling me that the herons were back, but bald eagles are hanging out on the island, and their concern was that the eagles were building a nest. And I looked at the area they thought the nest was in, and it's actually just kind of a cluster of three heron nests. But every time the bald eagle would start to land there while I was there, peregrines had just come back to the nest box near the rookery, and they were having none of the bald eagles, and they were just chasing them. So, yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like more and more the limiting factor for eagles is just nesting habitat or habitat in general. There's so many eagles now that, you know, just finding a logical place for them to nest is more and more the limiting factor for that species. I don't know if you agree with that or not, Sharon.
Yeah, and I mean, we're seeing way more territory battles, and bald eagles are being brought to rehab centers from very aggressive territory battles. Because, I mean, if space is tight, bald eagles will fight to the death to keep a territory.
You know, our mutual friend Stan Tequila was telling me that there is actually rookery activity. I don't know if that's the best term, with ospreys in some areas of Florida where ospreys are like colony nesting almost.
Huh. Stan makes observations, but I mean, the osprey in Florida are very different than ours. I think of them as kind of like retired osprey, and they will nest on anything that's not moving. I mean, if you stand in one spot for 10 minutes, you're at risk of an osprey putting a stick on your head.
So anywhere on the Mississippi River is a great place to see eagles, especially this time of year. Now, there's eagles year-round on the river, but right now it's this corridor, correct? It's just this pipeline for all these eagles heading north.
Yeah, it is a pipeline, and depending on where you are on the river, if it's still frozen a little bit north, that's going to back up some of the eagles, and they're gonna hang out on the river. I mean, that's one of the things that makes Wabasha so great is, you know, you have those pockets of the Mississippi River in the wintertime that everything else is frozen over, but they'll stay open, and the eagles will just kind of cluster there looking for fish and going for waterfowl. Like my wetland, I had a couple of bald eagles on Saturday cruising over my wetland, and they were just harassing the ducks, trying very hard to get some of the mallards.
Yeah, the Chippewa River helps keep things open down there. What's your take on eagle populations, Sharon? It's certainly my casual observation that we've never had more eagles, that the population is doing great. Other people have suggested that that's not necessarily 100% true. Where do you stand on eagle numbers?
Well, we definitely have way more eagles than we had when I was a kid. It kind of got to a point, I remember hearing about 10 years ago, that we have more bald eagles now than what's in the written historical record, at least in Minnesota. So, I mean, we had no idea that they would come and nest in the metro area the way that they have. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, if there was an eagle nest going up somewhere, you know, they kind of cordon off the area. It's like, no one get near the nest, no one disturb the eagles. And like I said, we have that one that's right next to 35W, right over a well-used bike and pedestrian trail. So they're getting used to us. If we do see a little bit of a decline in bald eagles, that's just because the population grew to a point where it could. And now if we're going to have a decline, it has to reach a threshold. We can't have unlimited eagles.
I remember the first eagle nest on Upper Miss Refuge, mid-80s. My dad came home so excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they had about a half a mile cordoned off area, you know, just sacred ground. Don't get anywhere near it.
Yeah.
Now there's dozens and dozens of eagles nest up and down the river. And that's great. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but that's just how far we've come. And that's a good thing. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisa, chatting with our friend Sharon Stately, the bird chick. Follow her on Instagram and other social media platforms. You also had another fun story, Sharon. You posted something about hearing the wrong kind of hawk in a movie. And I said, you know, I think that'd be a fun idea for a story. And you wrote a really good one that I think a lot of people who watch movies were nodding their head to as they read it. You do hear a lot of incorrect bird sounds and other wildlife sounds coming out of Hollywood, don't you?
You do. And I mean, there was even that scandal with, what was it, the PGA, where they were piping in bird sounds on the golf course, and it was European birds.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. And Werner's like, huh, that's interesting hearing, the European blackbird back there. And that's, you know, in the United States.
Okay, now hold it. So this was a live event?
Yeah, yeah.
And were they piping it in for spectators or for viewers at home?
Viewers at home. And I mean, it happens a lot. And for me, I know bird songs so well that it can really take me out of something. My ex-husband used to hate going to movies with me because we'd be in this really intense situation and then a loon call would go off in the desert and I'd just go,
and he's like, well, that's obnoxious, a loon call in the desert. Now, I think you had a couple examples in your story where, like, it was a flycatcher that might actually live in Minnesota part of the year, but it was like in May or something, and you knew that was incorrect. I mean, that's starting to split hairs a little bit, Chaz.
Okay. It was a movie, and there was a tawny owl calling, and it was set in Minnesota at Lake of the Isles. But I mean, the one that got me was I was helping out the Science Museum with an exhibit on the Mississippi River, and they had the backwaters and this flock of wood ducks take off. And, you know, anyone here who I would think outdoor news readers know what wood ducks sound like when they take off. It's a very distinct flap, that kind of whiny sound that they make when they take off. But instead, she had put in a barnyard geese honking. And that's I just incredible. Started laughing because it was just so disparate to me.
Well, oh, yeah. That's terrible. And I mean, yeah. that was an interesting anecdote that you laid out there in your story. I don't know if you saw the actual layout of the story, the final piece, Sharon, but I grabbed a photo of a kookaburra, which is an Australian bird that you hear in all kinds of Hollywood movies.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Forever. I mean, I think you go back and watch Flipper or Gentle Ben, you'll hear that bird in the background, and it's not even found in North America.
No, it's Australian and New Zealand. I think a couple of islands, but you hear it for South America. You hear it for Africa. It's this jungle sound. But I actually recently just took the city of St. Louis Park to task because in January they posted video of flying squirrels at someone's bird feeder, and there's snow on the ground. But the sounds behind it were crickets and katydids, like the soundscape that you would hear in late August. And it just hurt my brain so much because, like, there's snow on the ground. You would not hear these with snow on the ground. And I left a comment, completely forgetting that a friend of mine works for the city of St. Louis Park and is their social media person.
But you know what? I mean, that and like the barnyard geese example, you don't have to be a semi-professional birder to know that stuff. There's a little bit of just try harder, folks. Use a little common sense, man.
Yeah, but no, it's just, it's fascinating to me. And every now and then, someone will be super accurate with their birds, and I'm really impressed. Like, I remember Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, they had Western screech owls calling sometimes in the cemetery. And I was like, that's really great. Not only is it a North American species, it's the Western version. And back when Game of Thrones was on, birders used to keep track of the birds that they would hear on Game of Thrones. I think one day I was irritated because in the desert I was hearing a limpkin, and my ex-husband said, the show has dragons. You can accept the dragons, but you can't accept. I was like, it'd be different if that was a wetland and the limpkin was going on.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. Sharon, we're out of time. Before we go, though, I had pinged you about using a birding app to identify birds. And I real good one is this Merlin app, right?
Hands down, folks, that's
if folks see a bird, they don't know what it is, you can download this Merlin app and figure it out.
It's free and it will identify birds by photo, by sound. And if you don't have either, it'll ask you a series of like 5 questions and give you some options of the bird that you may have observed. Now, I want to say Merlin isn't a guarantee. It can make mistakes, but I would say it's about 90% accurate.
Awesome. I encourage folks to use that and follow you on some of the social media platforms like Instagram. Just search for Bird Chick.
Yep.
Thanks for joining me the past 2 weeks, Sharon. I really appreciate your time.
Anytime, Rob.
All right. Sharon Staitler, the Bird Chick. Follow her on Instagram and all those other great social media platforms. We're going to break more of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreisland. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the content here, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. If you'd like to subscribe to our digital or print versions, you can do it all via that phone number or website. Hey, about once a year, I check in with our buddy over in Wisconsin, Dean Bortz, the editor of a fine newspaper called Wisconsin Outdoor News. There's a lot of big stuff brewing in the Badger State. We got April hearings over there. They've got their Conservation Congress, so it's always a good time to check in with Dean. Hey, Dean, it's good to see you, and I hope you're enjoying the fairly balmy spring weather.
Yeah, everything's going good right now. We're up above freezing every day. It's actually great sapping weather if you want to collect maple sap. We're falling into low temperatures, freezing temperatures at night, above freezing during the day. So sap's running good.
Dean, yeah, you've got a Conservation Congress in the Badger State. We don't have that. That's where there's delegates from every county in the state. They have a meeting. I forget the exact date. It's like the 14th of April. They get together and they vote on a bunch of natural resources issues. Some years the agenda is full of really interesting things. Sounds like it's not quite as interesting in 2026, but what are the hot topics for your April hearings in Wisconsin this spring?
Yeah, it's always the second Monday in April. It used to be the first Monday in April until we found out that the NCAA championship game always fell on that night, and we had trouble getting people to the meetings. And so in the early 90s, it switched to the second Monday in April, and we've been doing it ever since then.
So that's April 13th here.
April 13th here, right. Yeah, Monday, April 13th, we'll be having, we have in-person meetings that night, and then we also have online voting that starts that day that'll continue on through the Wednesday following for folks who don't make it to the meetings. We have 44 questions this year. It's split between the DNR gets to ask its proposed rule changes and the Natural Resources Board, which sets policy for the DNR. They can throw in a few questions if they wish, and this year they have more so than in the past.
Sandhill crane hunting had been an agenda item for a number of years, Dean. Is that no longer on the agenda? What's the status of that, I guess?
Yeah, and we're actually going to have an update on that in the front page of our next issue, which we're working on this week. There are bills in both houses that were passed in the assembly, and I think they're going to hold off the vote in the Senate because they don't have enough votes to pass it in the Senate. And our legislative session is about to shut down if it hasn't already. And so I think they'll bring it back around the next time. So we're not going to have a sandhill crane hunt in Wisconsin this year.
Okay.
And maybe not quite next. But all of the politicians, legislators, the conservation groups that worked on it said, okay, we didn't quite get it this time, but we feel pretty good about where we're at. And they'll try to bring it around maybe in another year or two. So there is support for it, but not quite enough to push it across the finish line.
And that had been an agenda item during the spring Conservation Congress hearings for a number of years, yeah. I believe. And there was pretty strong support with it with the Congress, I believe, right?
Right. We had a lot of support from Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Yeah, there was quite a bit of support from it. The farmers supported it. A little resistance from the Crane Foundation and Baraboo. But you know, overall, I think it'll make it to reality here at some point.
Yeah. Well, what are the big topics on the Congress agenda this year, Dean? We were talking a little bit off air. Is Wisconsin snooping around on the dedicated funding concept?
For the DNR? Yep, correct. Yeah. So the Natural Resources Board, typically the board members will ask one or two questions in an advisory nature of things that they see going on. But this year, the Natural Resources Board has about 7-8 questions, maybe 9, regarding dedicated funding or alternate funding for the Department of Natural Resources. We've been running a little short budget-wise for a lot of programming, fish and wildlife programming over the last few years. We've been holding it together, but it's not going to hold together for a whole lot longer if we don't see a little bit more cash flow into the agency. So the NRB has a number of questions on the agenda for this year. Probably the biggest one would be copying Minnesota and Michigan's fraction of a percent of sales tax that would be dedicated to the DNR's fish and wildlife budget.
It's been tremendously successful over here, Dean. As you and I were talking off air, it originally passed in 2008. Minnesota's actually looking at having to renew it sometime probably 7-8 years from now. We've got to get it back on the ballot and get the public to support it again because it sunsetted after 25 years. But the volume of work it has accomplished here in the Gopher State has been tremendous, Dean. I mean, I'm sure well over $1 billion has been dedicated to all sorts of natural resources projects in the field. And, the language is important. It's got to be clear that this is about field work. If your citizens over there think that dedicated funding is going to go for, maintaining, the Jeff One building in Madison, they're probably not going to support it, right?
Right.
They want to see field work getting accomplished. So the language is extraordinarily important.
And I think that's where this is going. The Natural Resources Board has everything pretty well spelled out. They're using other states as an example of how the money's been spent, exactly what you were just saying. They have an example on there about what sort of work has been done in Minnesota and Michigan. I'm surprised we haven't had this way before now, because I was actually a Conservation Congress delegate when I was just moved up to Oneida County. The chairman at that time, Bob Ellingson, was telling us about the Missouri's 0.125% of sales tax.
Missouri plan.
They were using it, right. And so he went down there and studied the whole situation, brought it back, made a heck of a pitch, and we just could not get it. Nobody was listening to that. It's like, holy, it seemed like a very easy solution to this situation that now we're still looking at in 2026.
Right. Well, you know, it's good because it makes every citizen have a little bit of skin in the natural resources game. You know, it's not just license holders and excise taxpayers that are funding all of this. Wisconsin's a conservation state. Great conservation legacies over there. I'm really glad to hear that that's brewing, and I hope that you guys can get it done. I hope sportsmen over there support it. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Dean Bortz, the editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. They've got their April spring hearings coming up on the 13th. Last point about the spring hearings, Dean. It's important that sportsmen over there attend and make their voice heard.
It really is. You know, for all the people who we have buying licenses, whether it's hunting, fishing, trapping, state park stickers, whatever, we do not get much of a voice from those folks when it comes to different conservation issues, whether it's a legislative hearing, a deer management meeting. Well, I should take that back. We do get people to show up for deer management meetings. But if it's anything other than deer, we don't hear too much from folks. It really would be nice to see a good turnout here this year, whether they're in person or whether they vote online between Monday the 13th and Wednesday the 15th.
That's a layer of democracy over there that Wisconsin has that we don't have in Minnesota with that Conservation Congress. For better or worse, there's times I kind of shake my head at some of the things that come out of this hearing scene. But overall, I think it's always good when we've got, you know, democracy at the local level. And, you know, I know we've got some Wisconsin listeners. I'd encourage you guys to participate in it because it's not something to take for granted. Dan, a few minutes left. You got an earlier trout opener already kicked off this weekend, April 4th. That's like a month earlier, isn't it? What's going on? Are the trout streams literally like teeming with fish? You got to go out there and kill some of them?
Boy, I'll tell you what. I don't know if they, you know, if everybody has heard about this, but they, and you have it in Minnesota too, your southeastern driftless region, our southwestern driftless region. They call it the Montana, the Midwest. Those streams produce some really good fishing. I have two nephews who grew up stream trout fishing in Ashland County like their dad and I did. They're living in the La Crosse area. Those guys, they really have been making use of that resource down there. They just love the trout streams in southwestern Wisconsin. But the season you're talking about goes well beyond. We have great stream trout fishing up in the northeastern part of the state. Marinette County has some beautiful streams, and not just there, but a number of other counties too. But I guess the impetus there was that we have a lot of trout. We have a lot of streams. Our general inland fishing season opener is the first Saturday in May, a little bit earlier than yours. But folks felt that, geez, you know, we could probably stand to fish trout a little bit earlier. And this follows, as it 2 years ago, we created a early catch and release largemouth. Well, I think it's when I say it, it's probably bass, so smallmouth and largemouth. So that starts early also in April. So yeah, we're kind of expanding where our fishing seasons go.
We're seeing that with Minnesota bass season too. We have, you know, year round catch and release season now, which is ongoing as we speak for the first year. Yeah, you can go out and catch and release bass right now. So yeah, I don't know if it's chalk it up to climate change a little bit. You know, these streams are sitting there wide open and the fish are available. They got a longer growing season and maybe the fisheries folks think we can put this added pressure on. So I guess get out and enjoy it. If you're a trout fisherman, you can get out and start working trout pretty hard in Wisconsin this weekend. Dean, we just got a minute left here, but before we go, a pretty big story down what Madison area. You had a break in at a facility, a bunch of animal rights people trying to release some dogs. We printed it in last week's Minnesota edition if folks want to read about it, but pretty big story down there, including what a former Baywatch actress, I think, was one of the perps, right?
Right. Yeah. If I have her name right, it's not Pamela Anderson. It was Paula Alexander. And I suppose that show should have been in my wheelhouse back at the time, but I just don't really remember watching it a whole lot. So when the name Paula Alexander popped up, I'm thinking, which one was she? I don't really remember.
Same here, yeah.
But yeah, there was apparently they were having an animal rights type convention in Monona, adjacent to Madison, on that weekend or in that time frame, and they must have felt, hey, we're all together here, we should go do something. And they went and broke into this beagle kennel and made off with at least 22 dogs, and they got some of them back. I haven't heard an update more recently on whether they got them all back. But yeah, there were a number of arrests made. Everything was peaceful enough, you know, other than them hacksawing and cutting into buildings, but the rest went peacefully enough. And it wasn't the first time they were at that place. I found that out afterwards. And so there's some court proceedings that were underway prior to them making the latest break in there.
Well, a lot of headlines across the St. Croix coming at us from Wisconsin. Dean, thanks so much for filling us in, and have a great spring. It was good to see you.
Yep. You take care, Rob.
Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. Stick around. We will return more of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory length enforcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. First full weekend of April 2026. I hope you are enjoying the spring weather. I'm Rob Dreisline. I hope you like the chatter here. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to the print or digital versions of Outdoor News that way. We've got great content on that website. From across the Great Lakes region and even around the country, we update that website multiple times per day. A lot of great content there. My buddy Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up this week's show. And Tim, we haven't spoken a lot about river fishing, but that's going great guns from the Rating River on the north part of the state, northern border of the state, to the Mississippi River down here in the southeast.
One of my favorite things to do is Rainy River, and the best fishing for sturgeon anywhere is right there. That is so much fun. It's gotten to be more and more popular now. Used to be able to go up there and fish sturgeon, and you'd be like the only boat on a spot. And now you got to have a little bit of a strategy where you're anchoring and try to get out a little bit earlier than the rest of them, because it is getting to be a popular sport. But I'll tell you right now, it's well worth going up there and taking advantage of that situation. The river sturgeon fishing, Rainy River, is second to none. Big fish, lots of them. Well, I'll tell you what, when you hook in one of those monsters, you know, like 50, 60, 70 pounders, you are in for a battle. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was up there with Stacy Barber, and we were fishing, we were taping a television show, and we had two boats on the water. And Stacy was just helping me out. We were, him and I were working cameras and doing some stuff. And Stacy looked at me as he's fighting this one sturgeon, and he goes, "Tim, I don't know how it can get any better than this." And about that time, the guy we were videotaping sets the hook. And a guy in the other boat that we were taping sets the hook. And pretty soon we got fish jumping all over the place. And one of them actually went under the boat and jumped between the two boats up in the air and landed right in front of Stacy. And he turned and looked at me and said, "I take it back. It's better."
It's amazing what an incredible fishery that's turned into. Joe Shedd wrote a nice piece 2 weeks ago about, you know, he called it a crack at a fish at a lifetime. That's what it is up there. And, you know, that's transformed in my lifetime, even during my professional career. I was just kind of getting going in the 90s, and look at it now. And not just there. I mean, they're working on restoring sturgeon to the Red River Basin, the St. Croix. You could catch a sturgeon in a lot of border waters these days, big ones.
Yeah, really, it's really great fishing. And the Mississippi River, always a great opportunity to catch some really nice big walleyes, some huge crappies this time of year. If you want the walleyes, you got to stick to, you know, the main channels pretty much in the dams. You want to be fishing river mouths. But if you want those crappies, get back into the channels. The Wisconsin Channel is one of my favorite places to go. Make sure you get a Wisconsin license if you go into the Wisconsin Channel. But I'll tell you what, it is incredible. And these crappies are huge, and you can catch crappies over 2 pounds in that back, in those back channels this time of year. It's phenomenal fishing. And the water's up high enough, you know, usually so that you can get back in there. Be careful whenever you get into those back channels, but it's really great fishing. And again, the walleye fishing, I generally like to stay away from the dams. I like to go out and fish the mouths of those creeks and those streams and those smaller rivers that are coming into the Mississippi, where these fish stack up on the, they're not in those river areas where they're going to spawn, or those creek areas where they're going to spawn. They're not there yet. So what they're on is those rubble and cobblestone areas just out in front. And what you're doing, you're pitching a, you know, I use a quarter ounce. Some guys try to get by with eighth ounce jigs, but I use a quarter ounce jig and just a 6-inch ribbed plastic worm. I use a power worm. And I'm telling you, man, you can catch a ton of walleyes. I anchor sometimes, use your trolling motor to stay in that one spot and just pitch that thing upstream, let it drift right down, and boom, all of a sudden it stops. You feel that tug, there's another one.
Yeah, those fish are stacking up there in those, where those streams enter the river, and they're waiting for food to come down. The nice cold water is hitting them in the face, and they're waiting for food to come down with that current. I grew up downriver Winona La Crosse area, and I still remember how, you know, everyone would get all worked up about fishing opener. And I'd be like, "What, you know, what are you talking about? We've been fishing the river since the ice went out, you know, below the dams in our boats or wherever." I guess I kind of took for granted that year-round season we had on the mighty Mississippi.
Yeah, and I always tell people, if you're going to fish the river, you can still get some cold nights where you go down there and you go to put your boat in, you still got a little ice on the landing. I don't know, it's getting pretty warm now, but every once in a while, I'd go down there and I'd have to throw some sand out on the boat landing just so I could get back in. So I always take some sand and some salt with me in the back of the truck just to make sure I'm safe if the temperature drops. You'd be surprised how quick it can freeze up when the temperature drops, and it can happen this time of year. You just never know.
Al Linder writing about crappie fishing. I saw crappie fishing going great guns. He said, you know, he usually stays off a lake for maybe about a week after ice off occurs, but after that, the bays start warming up and the big slabs start snapping.
I usually get out right away. Once the ice is gone, boom, I'm there that day. And the reason why is because those crappies are still going to be out in those spots where they were when you were ice fishing, in those deep holes. And they'll be there for about, like Linder says, they'll be out there for about a week. Now, he doesn't want to go out and mess with that, because you got to literally sit right over the top of those fish. Now, you're in open water. It's a little windy. It's real tough. But if it's a calm day, you can sit right over the top of those fish, and you can drop down a tiny jig and just twitch that tiny jig. And now you're not fishing stationary. I like to move a little bit. You know, I don't usually set my trolling motor up on spot lock. I'll let the jig move a little bit this way, dart it a little bit this way, and all those fish that wouldn't hit that jig as it was sitting stationary in one spot will all of a sudden turn on to that little jig that's moving horizontally instead of just vertically. And so that works too.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Riesline and Tim Lesmeister winding down this week's broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Tim, week after next, turkey hunting gets going here in Minnesota. We've had a number of stories about turkey hunting opportunities. I can't remember if you and I talked last week about this turkey research. I think we did, in the Hennepin County Parks, Three Rivers Park District, where there's even talk of maybe transporting a few turkeys from Minnesota down to Texas to help that population get reestablished. We talked about that. But the turkey hunters, they're wide-eyed, wild-eyed right now. The season starts, the A season, on the 15th and pretty much runs till the end of May. There's a lot of great opportunity. You can buy a tag over the counter. You can buy an archery tag that's good for the entire season. You can use any equipment under your regular tag. We have insanely liberalized turkey hunting in this state to the point there is no excuse to not get out and participate.
Yeah, but turkey hunting is very addictive. It's actually the most addictive non-drug substance on the planet. Every turkey hunter I know, about a week before the turkey season, they start ignoring their dog. They start ignoring their spouse. They start ignoring their fishing rods. They start ignoring their guns, except for the one they're going to use for the turkey shoot. And then nothing else matters. They wake up in the morning and they start going through their calls, and they lay out all their mouth calls. They lay out all their box calls. They start shaking the gobbler calls, and they'll have one in each hand, and they want trying to remember which ones are the best. And all of a sudden it's like, what happened to this individual? They seemed normal. And all of a sudden everything's changed. It's a great sport, and you're right. It's amazing what has gone on with turkey hunting right now. Mark Strand just did a good article here a couple of weeks ago in the Outdoor News print edition about calling. And I think that's the most important factor when you're spring turkey hunting is calling. And of course, he's saying, you want to do it very silent, not call at all, and just let that turkey kind of slowly meander to you if there's one in the area, or do you want to call vigorously and or maybe just very subtly? Do you want to be loud and proud, or do you want to be non-existent? And he makes a good article. It's a great article, and he makes a good argument for being loud and proud. And I don't know. I guess if you're a really good caller, that makes sense. But if you're lousy, there's a lot of bad callers out there, and that's the reason 75% of turkey hunters don't get one.
He also talked a lot in another story about movement and how important it is not to move when you're turkey hunting. You will get busted. And, a quick thing I always remind people is if you're a deer hunter, you know how much movement you can get away with white-tailed deer. There's a little movement you can get away with deer when you're hunting them, especially when you're up in a tree stand. You can't get away with that much movement with turkeys. If you move as much while turkey hunting as you move while deer hunting, you will get busted. So there's Rob's little quick hunting reminder for you. Tim, thanks for spending a couple seconds with me again this week. We'll talk to you in 7 days. Thanks for all you do, buddy.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, thank you to him, all of our other guests. Hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Riesline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.